I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today, I'm joined by photographer extraordinaire John Cavalier and PGA Tour star Zach Blair. Guys, welcome on.
Thanks, man. It's good to be back.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, bringing back the crew. Talk a little bit of golf courses, architecture, see what else we get into. You guys have good Christmases?
Absolutely. Holiday is always a fun time of year.
Yeah, it was good out here. Nice to spend some time at home.
This podcast is making my Christmas, though, Andy. To be honest, as original guest way back when on, I think, episode 13 of the podcast, I wasn't sure that our stars were bright enough to hang on a fried egg after you've really taken this thing off over the last year. So I'm very honored to be on.
You can't forget the people that made the podcast what it is.
I'm thrilled to be back.
I have to redeem myself. I was a much worse host than I am now. I'm still a horrible host, but I feel like I might be getting a little bit better. Let's kick things off. I wanted to go do a rundown of our favorite courses, new courses that we played this year. So not necessarily new, but new to us. And I think we each got a list of 10 together, and we'll each name one at a time. I didn't really put mine in order because I don't like ranking courses, but I don't know if you guys have it in order. I can shuffle it into a semblance of an order if so.
Yeah, I mean, they're all good. All the ones that I got listed are solid. So I guess the order doesn't really matter much.
Yeah, let's start. John, you kick it off.
Sure. So, like you said, I can't believe it was a pretty solid year for new to me golf courses, especially the first half of the year. And like you said, I can't believe I'm about to leave some of these off. But I guess we can talk about some of these places that are outside my top 10 when we talk about the happy surprises and the hidden gems. But so my 10 best new to me courses from 2017, I'll go in reverse order here. And again, these are loose because, when you really get down to it, who's to say whether one of these is better than the other? But in any event, at number 10, I have Monterey Peninsula Country Club, the Shore Course, which just nudges out the Dunes course. We talked a little about this last time. I am absolutely enamored with Monterey Peninsula Country Club. I think it's quite possibly the best 36-hole facility in the country. So the Shore Course gets my vote there by a narrow margin. At 9, I have Mid-Ocean Club in Bermuda, which I went and saw in March. And certainly, as you know, Andy, I'm a big CB McDonald's fan, so I had really been looking forward to getting over there, and it did not disappoint in the least. It is absolutely gorgeous, and to play some CB McDonald architecture and see those templates in an environment like that is just, it's amazing. So I had a blast there. Number 8, Gaza Ranch, which met and exceeded every bit of my already high expectations. 7, Milwaukee Country Club, which is just a terrific place with some really amazing classic architecture. 6 and 5, I actually have two dope courses. I have Rock Creek Cattle at 6, and I have Ballyneal at 5. Those are similar in a certain sense in that they're both sort of off the beaten path, but both are absolutely wonderful courses. 4, I have Camargo Club, which, as you may remember from the last podcast, was one of the places I wanted to see most in 2017. So I finally got out there, And it is truly a special Seth Rayner design. Some really bold templates, which we can talk more about. And then my top three new-to-me places for 2017 is a pretty good trifecta. And we could put these in any order, and they could all stand. So I'll just rattle them off. I have Sand Hills, Pine Valley at number two, which I finally got to play several times in 2017, actually. And then at number one, I have Cypress Point Club, which if your listeners follow me on Twitter or Instagram at all, they know that I have been wallpapering my accounts with photos from Cypress for the last 11 months. And it is everything that I had ever hoped a golf course could be, and then a whole lot more. It is beautiful. To say it's a beautiful place is really to do it an injustice. It is as close to my vision of heaven on earth as I could have possibly imagined. And so to get out there in 2017, it's not easy to find a course that you would, quote, rank ahead of Pine Valley. And again, you could put these in any order, but Cypress Point was just an incredible experience.
Yeah,
that's my top 10.
Kind of the way I feel with like the very best golf courses. Every one of them, you walk off it and you're like, oh, that might be the best golf course in the world. You know, and you
exactly
say that. But which of that 10 were you kind of, which one did you have the least expectation going into that got its way in there?
That's a good question. I think it would probably be Rock Creek, simply because I didn't know that much about it. I just knew that it was a doke course in Montana. I'd never been to Montana. I actually played it when I was in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, in August for one of my wife's races. So I drove over to Deer Lodge. Actually left Coeur d'Alene at midnight to do that drive. You lose an hour driving east. And, you know, I knew it would be good because I knew it was a doke. It's on some ranking lists. I certainly knew it would be beautiful given its location, but I was just really impressed with everything about the place. It is a really neat environment. The golf course is just an incredible design. It's mountainous, but it's still walkable. It really encourages fun ground shots, which you don't see at mountain courses very often. The scenery was gorgeous. The conditions were absolutely perfect. And so having played there and driving back to Coeur d'Alene, it was a lot of time to think about it. And it just really struck me as a place that was virtually perfect. I mean, it's one of those rare courses you walk off and you think that there's really nothing you could change to make it better. It just really blew me away. And I guess I should be used to that now in seeing these dope destination courses. Like Ballyneal, for example, which is another of my favorites. But I just heard more about Ballyneal. I knew what I was getting into when I played out there. And I didn't have those kinds of sort of preconceived notions or, you know, I hadn't done any study about Rock Creek before I went out and played it. So I really went in as a blank canvas. And it was just a spectacular place. I mean, anybody ever out there, if you're looking for places to play and you have some access, or even if you don't, you give the club a call and see what they say. But it is a course that I recommend most highly to anyone who is up and in that area. It's just terrific.
That's I've heard from a lot of people. Some people think it might be his best design doke ever, but it just lacks the seaside eye candy that like a Pacific Dunes, a Terry Eady has.
Yeah. I think that's very fair. I mean, my three favorite doke courses are Pack Dunes, Ballyneal, and Rock Creek. And depending on what your preferences are or what you feel like playing on a given day, I think you could very easily rank those three in any order. And all of them are terrific. All three are very, very high on my personal list of favorite modern golf courses.
So moving on, ZB, what do you got for us?
Yeah, so, you know, when we were talking about this, I didn't play a lot of new courses, I didn't think, but then you kind of were a little shocked and gave me all the courses that I had played. So the list came a little easier after that. I would go Shadow Creek in Vegas. The Foz came through with a nice one down there. Got over to Marion. That was awesome. I was actually I had heard kind of, you know, a few different people talk about it, and a couple people had said how amazing it was, and then a few people were kind of shocked that it was ranked so high. So I kind of went in with low expectations for that, you know, grade of a golf course, and was pretty blown away when I got done. I was kind of offended that somebody, actually multiple people, thought that it wasn't like that good. So that was really cool. The Pine Valley short course, I got to play that this year for the first time, and that was really cool.
Yeah, we need to talk about that, Zach. Sorry to interrupt you, but I also played the short course for the first time this year, and I was blown away. So we can talk about that after you give us your list. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, for sure. I would love to. I played LACC, the South course that Gil Hance did, and that was really, really cool. I think it's a nice compliment to the North course over there. It's just a fun course. I think there's, you know, there's like six par fives and five par threes or something, and you know, it's just really cool. It's just it's more of a fun golf course compared to the North, which is very much of like a championship style place. The South is a little different, but it's really cool. I also got to go play the redo at Aronimink, which was awesome. Blown away actually with that one. Was kind of another one. I wasn't expecting it to be that amazing, and it was. Then I got down to Australia and played some sweet spots. Played Victoria. Kingston Heath was another one that was really, really cool. And then Royal Melbourne was probably my favorite thing you would expect it to be from the stuff you hear. Another cool one that I got to do with you actually, Andy, was play a little dirt golf at the Buck Club earlier this year. So I'm going to throw that one on my list. Yeah. And then the last one, another one with you, was out in Chicago. Got to hit up Shore Acres, which was sick. You know, I'm a big Seth Rayner fan, the Rayner man. So, those are kind of, that's my list.
Yeah, that dirt golf was an unforgettable experience, you know?
Yeah, that was really fun. I don't know, you know, how often you can go to a piece of property and go out and, you know, put the cups and the pins in the ground and actually go play like 13 or 14 of the holes that you're planning out and actually make it playable. But it was definitely really cool. So that was one of my favorite rounds of the year.
Yeah, John's got to get out there next time we go.
I'm sure. Dying to.
So I'll give you my 10, not in any particular order. I have Moraine Country Club in Dayton, which is recently redone by Keith Foster. It's an Alec Nipper Campbell design. And I had been told by somebody that it was like one of the 25 best courses in the country, and I kind of was like, oh, yeah, whatever. And then I went out and played it, and he said classic courses in the country. And like it for, I would say that it is one of the best, you know, courses that I've ever played. I haven't played them all, so I can't say that with definitively that it was, one of the top 25, but just unbelievable land and, just a great championship golf course. I have said, Sand Hills in there, which obviously, I mean, just the whole experience of going to Sand Hills, and then, you know, the golf course is absolutely remarkable. The scale is jaw-dropping. Every hole is just packed with strategy, and there are so many alternate routes of play. Like, you can play it so many different ways. It is very, very cool, and a not too tough of a golf course for like a beginner is one of the coolest things I think about that place, is that a 30 handicap can go out there and have a decent time because those contours can really help them, and it's, you don't spend very much time looking for golf balls. One that I went out with you, Zach, Fisher's Island is on that list. Another unbelievable golf experience. You know, you'd, one of those ones that you don't never know when you'll get back there. So you cherish it. We had like an absolutely perfect day out there, and just the scenery mixed with the Rainier templates is it gives you like a slice of what Cypress Point, as Seth Rainier Cypress Point, might have been, you know. Then Chicago Golf, that was a really cool one. I did Chicago Golf, Shore Acres, and Fishers all in like a 10-day stretch. It was pretty awesome. But Chicago Golf, I mean, the scale in it, it's similar to what you said about Marion. Is you hear a lot of people say Chicago Golf's not that great. Oh, it's not that special. And then you get out there and you're like, what were those people talking about? A modern one that I really liked, I played Kingsley Club up in northern Michigan. That's a really cool place, really cool course. Would anybody that gets a chance to go up there, I would highly recommend. And then I would throw it in there right next to it is Crystal Downs, which, you know, I walked off Sand Hills and was like, wow, that might be the best golf course in the world. And then I walked off Crystal Downs a couple weeks later and was like, whoa, that might be the best golf course in the world. I mean, that place with the land, the greens, it is truly, truly amazing. A funny story from there was I ended up playing with this guy that was clearly a you know, somebody that was more interested in checking off lists than like really, you know, understanding why Crystal Downs was so great. And we were in the locker room after the round, and he said, you know, I don't think that course was that great. And I go, and I like, meanwhile, I'm in like the complete opposite state of mind, taking my shoes off, like, you know, completely shocked at how amazing what I just saw was. And he goes, you know, the views just weren't that good. So that was a funny story from that trip. And then, I would say Ballyneal is in there, Doak's course in Colorado. I mean, just jaw-dropping scale, ground movement. I mean, that land site is something that you can't believe until you get out there. Then a public one that everybody, like, it's on my list that every single person in America should go play if you love golf course architecture, is Paso Tiempo. It is absolutely worth the $200 ticket to go play it. You know, it is, you know, a really great McKenzie golf course. The back nine is one of the best nine holes of golf anywhere in the world. And there aren't many public McKenzie courses that are, you know, that can give you the idea of what arguably the greatest golf course architect and ever, you know, how his work was, in the States at least. And then, my last spot, I couldn't decide between St. Louis Country Club and then Culver, the nine hole course in Indiana, which is a Langford Moreau. And then St. Louis Country Club is a McDonald. So I kind of have those slashed.
I also saw Culver for the first time this year. And I'm with you there. I was astonished at how cool that place was. And what a neat little nine-hole golf course.
I would say nothing to do about your list, but one of the stories you told in there about the guy when you played Crystal Downs, kind of the same thing when I played Marion. Something that I've learned in the last couple of years is it's just something like either people get it or they don't. You know, and it's nothing, you know, there's nothing wrong with the people that don't get it about, like, you know, really good golf course architecture. But it's just something, you know, there's just people out there that just don't understand it and they don't get it. And that's, you know, something that I couldn't get my head around it for a couple of years, thinking, you know, there were people out there that didn't understand that this was amazing. But just, people just have different, you know, opinions, you know what I mean? And it's just wild to think that it's possible that some people don't think that there's those places that are that amazing. But it just kind of happens. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, he kept going on and on and on about how awesome Arcadia Bluffs was, but like that, and I mean, that's a really cool place. It's a beautiful place that you'll like. The views are unbelievable, and I really enjoyed playing out there. But like, it's not a place that I'm ever dying to go back and play. But like Crystal Downs, like I like woke up this morning thinking about like the sixth hole there, and how cool it is. You know, it was like I've never done that with Arcadia Bluffs.
Yeah, it's just one of those things.
Yeah.
Well, and you hope it's a matter of sort of education progressing along as people see more courses. I mean, look, not for nothing, but the three of us have seen a lot of golf courses, good and bad. And when you have that, I mean, look, when I first started out and got into the game and was really, you know, fresh to this and seeing new places, you know, I was more enamored most likely at that point with a lookout over a lake than I was over the design of a particular hole. But as you see more and more, you hope, at least, and I'd say this, it's a very real risk of sounding pretentious about it, and I don't mean to, but you hope that as people see more and are exposed to more of these designs and different spots and different locations, that they at least begin to start to grasp the ideas and the concepts and the reasons that make a place like Crystal Downs so special, or a place like Marion so special. And I say that in their hopes, not my own. I mean, granted, the more people who are interested in this, the more people I have to talk to about it, which I enjoy doing, and it's a fun way to entertain myself. But it strikes me as a real shame that anybody could go to a place like Marion or a place like Crystal Downs and walk off thinking that it was anything other than an amazing golf course. You know, the idea that something like that is lost on somebody, it strikes me as similar to somebody walking around the Louvre and seeing all these masterworks and thinking, you know, I don't see what the big deal is. You know, that's a real shame. And hopefully, you know, those people eventually do come around. And I think a lot of people do. And I'm one of them. You know, I'll admit to that. I am absolutely a person who early on could not grasp the real significance of certain places and certain concepts. But as I saw more and I developed a greater base of knowledge, I was more able to do those kind of things. So I hold out hope for them.
Yeah, I think that it is so true. There's just the hardest thing is learning this stuff. It can't be done overnight. And you know, frankly, like some people play golf for different reasons, you know? I always wonder what the top 100 ranking list would, and it's almost impossible to do, but if sea, like ocean views wasn't a part of it, or water views, like where certain places would rank.
Very true. Yeah. And look, I'm a photographer in addition to being a golfer, and so I love nothing more than a golf course sitting next to an ocean. And it's a factor in how I look at golf courses. I admit to that. But it is interesting to see how a place like on the modern side, Ballyneal or Sandhills, or on the classic side, a place like, I mean, Shoreacres is a great example. It's right there next to a lake, but there are no views of the lake. But I think you'd be hard pressed to find anybody who thinks that that is anything less than an outstanding golf course. So it is interesting in that regard.
Zach, you're building a course without any ocean views. How would you combat that?
Yeah, you know, my options for ocean views in Utah were limited. So, but you know, at the end of the day, when you see like the number one course in the world, Pine Valley, is in the middle of like the Pine Barrens, no ocean views, and it's consistently ranked number one, it kind of gives you hope that, you know, you can do it. So, it's just things, you know, you hope you build a really good golf course that people have fun at and enjoy. And that's kind of the only thing you can do.
Do you guys have...
Well, also, I mean, I've seen the photos of your day out there. And, you know, you might not have an ocean, Zach, but you got some pretty incredible views at that place.
Yeah, it's good. You know, I'm always a little worried when I take people out there because I'm so spoiled with you know, living in Utah my whole life and growing up in Park City and having these unbelievable mountain views. And so when you go there, you don't know how people will react really when they see it, but it usually, I mean, everyone I've taken out there has always been pretty blown away with how cool it is. So, that's always nice.
I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, so let's move on to the biggest surprises. What places that might not have made that the 10 best that you saw list that really surprised you?
You want me to go first?
Whatever order you want to go. Zach, you want to go?
No. Cavalier, go first.
All right. I'll name a few. So some of these are more surprising than others, but on the list of places that really exceeded my expectations this year or gave me something I wasn't expecting, Bel Air Country Club is a place that really blew my socks off. I thought it was absolutely incredible. I went in there thinking that it was going to be really rough around the edges, given that at the time they were scheduled to close for a Tom Doak restoration. And usually when a course is undergoing a restoration, it's for a pretty significant reason, given the cost. So I wanted to see it before so that I could compare it after. And what was on the ground at the time, and this was in May, was astonishing to me. I thought it was incredible. One of the most ingeniously routed golf courses that I had ever seen, and some truly just outstanding golf holes there. So the idea that Tom Doak is now there working on restoring it to the George Thomas original design excites me to no end, and I can't wait to get back. That was a great one. Colorado Golf Club by Corin Crenshaw outside of Denver was a place, same thing. I mean, I had pretty high expectations going in, but what I ended up seeing there was really beyond anything I had hoped for. It's one of the best modern courses I had ever played, and I don't know that I've ever played a modern course that fits its surroundings as well as this place does. The views are incredible. The design is fantastic, and it is just a super fun place to play golf. Really a big fan of that place. While we're on the Corin Crenshaw stuff, Sand Valley, and in particular, Mammoth Dunes. Sand Valley is obviously wonderful. It's already ranked on the U.S. Top 100 list, and with good reason. It's a public golf course, and for all your listeners who are out there looking for public golf destinations, Sand Valley is, if not there already, it's certainly on the cusp of entering into that that Bandon Dunes, Stream Song, Kohler short list of places that are just the very best for public destination golf in the United States. But Mammoth Dunes in particular, I think there were only six holes open when I played it, but I was able to walk and see the rest of the golf course. That's the David McClay Kid course, the second course there. I am very eager to see the finished product because that course, at least in my experience, was really unique amongst American public golf courses. Massively wide fairways, humongous green, just an amazing place to play for both the novice and the expert. It's going to be terrific, and I can't wait to see how it stacks up to Sand Valley. I was able to see West Hampton and Southampton this year, which were the two Rainers left on Long Island that I hadn't seen. And again, given that I'm a Rainer fan, I knew I'd like them. But those are courses that are really overshadowed given the neighborhood that they're in, with National Golf Links and Shinnecock right down the street. Other big-name moderns like Friar's Head and Saboneck are nearby. You have Maidstone down the street. So it's a tough neighborhood. But these two courses were just classic gems that don't get the recognition or the exposure that they deserve. And if you scooped them up and planted them in any other location in the country, I think that they would each get serious consideration for top 100 lists. They're just fantastic examples of classic architecture that are well-maintained and that just have features that you don't get to see very often outside of these classic courses that that Rainer and his contemporaries built. Other than that, White Bear Yacht Club was a course that really exceeded my expectations. Super fun course outside of Minneapolis. some of the most wild fairways I've ever seen, elevation changes, slopes and the greens and the features. It just, it's a one of a kind place. I'm not sure why it doesn't get more, more recognition. I don't know if it's overshadowed by, you know, the other big name Minneapolis courses like Interlochen and Hazeltine, but it is a tremendous, tremendous spot. Other than that, you mentioned Culver. That was a place that really was terrific. We'll talk more about the Pine Valley Short Course a little later on, I guess. And otherwise, I'd say that's really it. Oh, Ballyneal, the Mulligan course there, the par 3 course that Doak built. If you ever get a chance to go out to Ballyneal, this is for your listeners, make sure, just like at Dandon Dunes with the Preserve, make sure you build in time to play the Mulligan course, because I guarantee you, you have never seen anything like this place. The wildest greens I have ever seen on a golf course. I don't know what Tom Doak was thinking or doing or drinking when he built these things, but I am very much in favor of whatever he did to create these things, because they are absolutely amazing. And I can't imagine anybody going out there and seeing these greens and playing this little course would have anything less than one of the most enjoyable rounds of their life. So, highly recommended. And I think that's it for me on my list.
ZB.
Yeah, so when I was thinking about this, there was definitely one place that was in my top 10 new courses for 2017 that I totally just botched and missed. Baltimore Country Club was so sick. Like, I was we had went out, we were trying to play Burning Tree the week of the Quicken Loans National in Washington DC, and that kind of fell through. So we went up and played Elk Ridge, which is an old Rainer course kind of just, I guess, north of Baltimore. And someone reached out on Twitter and was like, hey, if you're over there, you should come over to, you know, Baltimore Country Club. It's like the best course in the area. And we were like, yeah, whatever, we'll come over. We'll, you know, it was Wednesday of the tournament. And we were like, yeah, we'll shoot over there, and went over there. And immediately, like, stepping on the first hole, it has that, like, wow scale. And we were like, okay, yeah, this is legit. And it was really, really cool. So that, I don't know what I would bump out on my top 10, but I'm throwing that one in there. So we'll go top 11. But some courses that were kind of under the radar that surprised me. Shady Oaks down in Fort Worth, went and played that. That was really cool. They're just about to tear it up and do a big renovation. And they also had a really cool short course out there that had just got done. So that was pretty cool to see. Barnboogle Dunes and Lost Farm down in Tasmania. I was very surprised with both of them. You know, the Dunes course, probably the more famous one, I guess, down there, Doak, did that one, and it was awesome. Probably, honestly, out of all the courses we played in Australia, I would say it was up there with, it was just consistently hole to hole, really, really good. There was no real, like, low points or spots that kind of felt like they didn't belong. It was really solid, all 18. And then the Lost Farms course was a Core Crenshaw, had one of the coolest opening stretches I've ever seen on a golf course, and then the finish there was pretty strong too.
So I got a question. How would you compare, like, Melbourne golf to, like, say, like, New York or Philly, like, as a golf scene?
I would say it's, you know, just as good. What's cool, and, you know, when I played in Philly this year, we went Marion, Aronimink, and Pine Valley. You know, they're all within 40 minutes of each other. Same thing. You get up to Long Island and you know, you go play some of those places. Obviously, National and Shinney and Southampton are right there. But then everything else, you know, is within an hour, I would say, maybe an hour and 30 minutes. The difference with Melbourne is everything's like 5 minutes away. So, you know, you got Victoria, both courses at Royal Melbourne, Kingston Heath, Metro, Yarra Yarra. You know, you've got all these courses, Commonwealth. You've got 15 golf courses that are like world-class courses within like 5 to 10 minutes of each other. So I would say that's kind of the biggest difference is just the proximity. They're just, it's crazy. So somebody actually, I think Ogilvy was telling me it was actually kind of just by chance that it happened. All the courses originally in Melbourne were kind of near the downtown area. And then it started getting busy. And a lot of the clubs were like, yo, we should like move our course because we don't want to be like where it's this busy. And they just happened to pick like that area. And it was like this perfect sandy soil. So it's pretty cool how it all happened, and it's a really cool area.
Yeah, that's cool. What about that? I was wondering about that Keeney Park place.
Oh, I just had it on my list right there. Keeney Park in Hartford. I went over there a couple times actually during the week of the Hartford tournament, and it's really cool. It's kind of got like a twist on a lot of template holes, and it's really neat. I would highly recommend it. To anybody that's kind of up there to at least go check it out. I mean, they were really cool out there. It wasn't too busy, but, I thought it was really fun. I enjoyed that a lot. And then my last one would probably be, the Bad Little Nine at Scottsdale National. I went out there this year during the, waste management on a Wednesday, and that thing is crazy how cool it is, like out of this world.
That's
by the way, second vote for Keeney Park here. I played there last fall while I was up in Hartford for a trial, and I thought that was just a super cool place. It's a muni that they've been putting some money back into, and they just have some fantastic holes there. I was really surprised. It would have made my list this year had I played it in 2017.
That's the pictures Zach sent me of that place, like I now have it like circled if I'm ever within, you know, anywhere close. And what's it cost, like 30, 40 bucks?
That's what I was going to say. I was going to say like 25.
Yeah. That's the type of golf course that needs to live more. And like, I don't know how conditioning is there, but like looking past the conditioning and looking at like the cool golf shots you get to hit and the interesting situations you get in is just so important. That's I've got a couple of those places on my list of surprises. Two of them are in Cleveland. So this place, Manikiki, which is an old Donald Ross, and Sleepy Hollow, which is an old Stanley Thompson. But both of them are in disrepair, unfortunately. Like offensive cart paths, like just some of the worst cart path placement I've ever seen in my life. So I took a picture of one of the holes out at Manikiki. It's like this, you'll love this, Zach and John. It's like a 210-yard par 3. And I guess they have the Cleveland Am there every year. And the cart path is literally 1 foot off the green. And there's like this big ravine behind the green. So like, you know, you can miss this. You're hitting like a long iron, and you can miss the green by a foot, and it hits the cart path and kicks into an unplayable lie. But I mean, when I posted a picture there, like I got like 20 emails from people that played in the Cleveland Am complaining about that cart path, which is funny. But man, if you put $1 million into one of those places, you would come back with like just one of the better public courses in the country. And then another surprise I had on here was the Country Club in Cleveland. You know, I kind of went into it with no expectations, and my God, like I almost put that into my 10 best. Like it is so, so good. It just like reaffirms my love of William Flynn, seeing like a great course of his outside of Philly. God, he just knew how to build a really good golf course. And then, the last one, I gotta give my boy Reese a shout out. Reese Jones redesigned or restored Medina number 2. Like, it is really good. Lots of short grass.
A restoration.
Yes. I mean, I couldn't believe it. Like, 3 holes in, I was like, man, this is pretty good. You know, I went into it with like expecting something to be messed up, but like, I really enjoyed my round.
Yo, Andy. So there's this course in Cleveland. It's, you know, it's like 10 minutes away from the country club. It's called Acacia.
Mm-hmm.
It was this old Donald Ross track that went under. They're going to build like houses on it. But there's this Highland Park place that's literally like right across the street from Canterbury that is like this 36-hole like public place. I don't know much about it. I think it's okay. I mean, it hosted like a Cleveland State Open or something way back in the day that Arnold Palmer won. But they tried to save it. They tried to save the Donald Ross course by saying like, hey, we'll give you the Highland Park place to build houses on. It's 36 holes. And we'll put all that money into this Acacia place that was this old Donald Ross track up there that is supposed to be like super sick, but they lost it. Now it's just like some park overgrown, like reservation they've turned it into for the next couple of years until they build houses on it. I thought you would have liked that though. Have you ever heard of that place? Acacia?
I haven't. It just makes me sad.
This guy, when I was up having lunch in Cleveland, was telling me about it. And he was like, yeah, man, we tried so hard to make them do like that. There was some like tax break they could take if they flipped the courses and did it at the other one, but the city ended up not doing it, and this guy was so bummed because he grew up playing at this Acacia Donald Ross course. But I wanted to go check it out, but it's all overgrown now. You can't even like recognize anything anymore. It sucks.
It's 2017 is going to be the year I think back and remember how I got way too deep in the municipal golf game and the just how maddening it is and how, oh God, it's just a nightmare. It's like you realize these courses are destined to be a shell of what they should be because of like just the situation they're in, you know? And like the town will always look at them as a service and, you know, for the most part, a lot of times a loss on the balance sheet. And can never, you know, see that how much better it could be.
Andy, 2 courses right now. If you could take them back to what they originally were, or like what they were meant to be, what 2 courses would you change?
Public or any courses?
Any course in America.
Oh man, I wasn't ready for this question.
Focus.
Tough question.
You too, John.
Pebble Beach would be one of mine.
I mean, Augusta. Like right?
Pebble Beach. You see old pictures of Pebble Beach, and look, Pebble Beach is obviously a great course as it sits today. But if you ever see old pictures of Pebble floating around online with the dunes and the exposed sand and the oddly shaped greens and the beautiful bunkers, it will make you weep. For what could be there.
So that's the only one.
I got one for you guys. Sharp Park, the McKenzie in San Francisco, that was like the public Cypress Point. I mean, like, if you could somehow, which I don't think is possible, it would just get washed away, but like, they had two holes that played right down the shoreline of the Pacific Ocean. Like, I mean, like, that place could be spectacular. It's another example of municipal golf and you know, the trials and tribulations of you know, putting something in the hands of the government to run.
I've been to Sharp Park, Andy, but I've never played it. I'll be out there in 2 weeks, and it's on my list, so I'm hoping to get a look at it while I'm out there.
I would be careful. I guess there's been a rash of people punching in the backs of windows and stealing stuff out of cars. So, you know, put your stuff in your trunk.
I appreciate the pro tip. Maybe I'll Uber it over there.
That's what I was thinking.
Shout out to Uber.
Yeah. So, potential sponsor of the pod, Uber.
There you go.
I would say Sharp Park, and I think Yale would be an interesting one to look at.
Oh yeah.
I think that would probably be. That'd be a pretty cool one to look at. There's so many. It's tough. I mean, Lead, of course, is the number one.
Tragedy. Don't get me started.
Yeah. but I don't think you can get that one back. So we'll get it. We'll give that one away. But what about you?
Yeah, I don't know. Pebble would be a cool one. Like John was saying, those pictures you see are just out of control. And then, yeah, I mean, you guys kind of mentioned all of them. There's nothing, no more to add. I'm good.
All right. So where are you guys looking? Let's just say one city / like densely concentrated area that you are dying to see in 2018.
Well, for me, Andy, it is 100% the Atlanta Chattanooga area. It's the only area I had on my list in 2017 that I didn't get to. I've played very little golf in and around that area, and I know they're not really next to each other, but they're certainly doable on the same trip.
You know, you guys, we didn't play our round at National Golf Links like we talked about, and you guys didn't go to Sweetens like you guys promised me.
That's what I'm saying. I get now, asked about Sweetens Cove more than any other course.
Now that I remember that, like I probably shouldn't have re-invited you guys on until you did that.
You may be right, but 2018 will not pass without me getting down there. I am dying to see Peachtree. It's probably my number one U.S. wish list course nowadays. I've just heard so many amazing things about it. I'm dying to play there. I'd like to see East Lake. I'd like to see Cuscawilla. I certainly would like to see Honors. I'd love to see those two little nine-holers. Sweetens Cove, like I said, I get asked about it all the time. Everybody I know who's played there just raves about the place. So I really want to get down there and see that. I'd like to see Sewanee, which I believe is a Gil Hance restoration or maybe an original. I'm not really sure.
You know, there's another course out there that's like in Georgia. It's kind of in the sticks that I stumbled across called Old Toccoa, and it's a Dave Axlin design, who's been one of Coren Crenshaw's right hand man for like ever, and it looks incredible, and it's probably about an hour from Sweetens.
Nine holes, right? They're trying to make it 18 though.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Beautiful, yeah. Beautiful bunkering.
Yeah,
I'd add that to your
good
list.
Pictures of that.
So much good golf down there that just is waiting. So I'm dying to go down there. And I know you only asked for one, but the other thing I need to do is I need to get back to Ohio. You guys were just talking about Cleveland area courses. I did get to Ohio for a very short trip early in the summer in 2017 when I played Camargo, and I also played Muirfield Village and the golf club. All of which were exceptional, but there are like 25 golf courses in Ohio that I just hear nothing but great things about. And given, like I said, that I live in Pennsylvania, it's our neighbor to the west. It's disgraceful how little golf I've played in Ohio. So I'm going to get back out there at least once this year and try to clean some of that up.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I can't really narrow it down to like one place, but Sweetens is kind of on the top of the list. I'm going to get out there, hopefully for DJ's birthday. And then, but man, there's a bunch of places in San Francisco that I need to check out. Want to go check out Myopia and Essex up in the Boston area. And then Sand Hills, Camargo, Crystal Downs. There's too many that I need to go to.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. I literally I don't know if I'm going to be in Chicago for like a week this summer, but I gotta go to New York. I gotta go to New York and Boston and, you know, a bunch of places, but, under the radar, I really am excited. I'm going to go up to Detroit for a while, and I don't think I'm even going to play Oakland Hills. I want to play the other courses in Detroit more than Oakland Hills.
Orchard Lake.
Yeah, I want to do Orchard Lake, Franklin Hills, Meadowbrook, Bloomfield Hills, Country Club of Detroit. I mean, I think they have a Travis, they have Allison, they have a Colt, they have a, Willie Park Jr., they have, they have a Ross, you know, a few Rosses. They have such good variety of architects. That's what I really like. Is a place where you can go and you can see five different guys work, and I think that's one of the coolest things about like Philly and Chicago to a certain extent, but these smaller cities that have like amazing how people got how these architects got there,
so true. Hey, and Andy, by the way, you bring up another, I guess I brought it up with Orchard Lake, but that's like the fourth Keith Foster restoration we've mentioned on this podcast. So just shout out to Keith Foster, one of the most humble people that I've ever had the pleasure of meeting in the golf business. And everything the guy touches turns to absolute golf gold. I have never played a Keith Foster restoration that I didn't absolutely love. Zach mentioned Baltimore Country Club earlier. Keith Foster did that restoration. Like you mentioned, he did the work at Moraine. He also did work at Philly Country Club that's been extremely well received. He's done things at Eastward Ho. He's done things at Sands Point. I mean, the guy is just a master artist when it comes to restoring classic golf courses. And I just wanted to take a second and shout out Keith Foster for everything he does. Since he takes very great pain to not shout out himself and to not overshadow the work of the original architect of the course that he's working on. So I'm just a huge fan of what he does.
I really love his business model, which is like, he only takes three jobs a year. The club has to go all in or he doesn't take the job. And he has like a 3-year waiting list. You know, he's booked for 3 years, which is, it's just crazy, you know?
Doesn't surprise me at all. The guy is just incredible with what he does. He does absolutely fantastic stuff. With zero ego, by the way. I mean, he is insistent upon the fact that after he is done, his name not appear as an architect on the course. Philly Country Club wanted to list him as an architect alongside A.W. Tillinghast. They wanted to have a Keith Foster event for him in his honor for the great work he did there. He turns it all down.
Hey, Keith did TPC Old White's the latest restoration too, right?
I believe that's correct. I'm not 100% sure though.
He killed it there too. I mean,
he killed it everywhere.
Yeah, that's really good. It was always cool, but it's really, really good now.
That's great to hear. I got to get back there. I haven't played at TPC Old White in a while.
Yeah, I need to get there. I mean, that's where don't I need to go? That's the better question. We'll get to some Twitter questions here. First and foremost, Sam Schumer ask John, why don't you sell a calendar? But you do.
Yes, I do. Or I did this year. Thank you for asking about that. I had a couple people make this request in the fall, and so I decided to go ahead and try to put one together. So I enlisted the help of my sister, who is a graphic designer, and who did a wonderful job putting together a little calendar for me. And I put it out on Twitter that if people wanted to buy it, they could. The idea was to raise a little bit of money for a charity. And I thought that I would sell a couple of them. But to be perfectly honest with you, the response was amazing. And I sold more than I ever thought I would. And as a result, we were able to recently make a nice donation of $2,500 to the Woodstock Sanctuary, which is an animal rescue up in New York that my wife is very involved in. And I should say that my wife is a very big supporter of animal rights charities, and she actually had the misfortune of being diagnosed with breast cancer over the summer. And everything's going well. She went through chemotherapy and just had her surgery, actually, less than a week ago. And she's doing great. But during the process, which can obviously be hard on people, she would occasionally go up to Woodstock to volunteer and do a little bit of work. And as she always says, as much as it's an animal sanctuary, it's really a human sanctuary as well. And she would always feel really good and refreshed when she would leave. And so it's been a charity that we've supported for a while. And to be able to donate some money to them was really the best thing about 2017 for me. I was honored to do that. I can't thank the people who were kind enough to buy these calendars through Twitter for me and for the charity. The charity's obviously thrilled with matching funds right now. The donation that we made was doubled to $5,100. And to the extent any more of these things sell, we'll implement that that later on. But I just can't thank the people who follow me on social media enough for that. I mean, it was very, very humbling and really an amazing honor to have people reach out and buy these calendars from me. And for such a good cause, and given what my wife has been going through and her involvement, it was really just so nice for us and so nice for our spirits and for my wife's state of mind. So to all of my followers in general, and certainly to my followers on social media that purchase these calendars, and I know we have a lot of cross followers, Andy, so I'm sure a lot of them are listening right now. I hope that they all know how much it meant to me and to my wife and to this charity that we support, that they would do that. So thank you to all of you who bought one of my little calendars, and you have my undying appreciation for that.
And good news is it's still not 2017, so there's still time. So we'll put a link in the podcast and on social media so people can know where to get them.
That's nice of you. Orders are still trickling in, and I still do have plenty of calendars sitting around my apartment waiting to go out. So thank you for that, Andy.
All right. Carve for the Course wants to know what courses you've played that were not very photogenic, but that were very photogenic. Actually, that were photogenic, but not architecturally sound.
Well, as I said on Twitter, I think the big one for this is Trump National LA. It's a golf course that it really sticks out in my mind for several reasons, some good, some not so good. It is on an unbelievably beautiful piece of property. It's just south of LA. It's on a little finger of land that sticks out on the other side of the road into the ocean. You have beautiful views of, I guess it's Catalina Island out there in the Pacific Ocean. It's hanging right off a cliff on the edge of the Pacific. It is an absolutely all-world beautiful site for a golf course. And so it's photogenic as all get out. I mean, you can't take a bad picture there. But the golf holes are just bizarre to me. My understanding is that Pete Dye built the golf course, and then Trump himself came in and tinkered with it and changed things. And the result is just a golf course that is disjointed. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't capture the best attributes of the land and incorporate them into the design. The design of the golf holes itself are very artificial. It's a real head scratcher. A lot of the holes play back and forth horizontally along the slope of the land. So there is a lot of goofy tilt to the course. It's almost like playing golf on like a rice farming terrace where, you know, you go across the property one way, then you step down 20 feet, come back across the property the other way, and then down another 20 feet. It's a very strange design, and given the location and the land, I mean, look, it's probably going to fall off into the sea one day anyway because it is awfully precarious looking, but the fact that a golf course that is of what we'll call less than ideal architectural merit occupies a space of land like that, in my view, is just sort of a tragedy, and I hope that one day it gets the designer and the architectural work that a piece of property like that deserves. But it is beautiful. There's no denying that. I mean, it is a gorgeous piece of property.
ZB, you got any courses that you've been just disappointed with? You had high hopes?
Man.
Is that just a weekly occurrence on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, Zach plays on tour, so he probably has a lot of them, but he's probably got to be a little careful.
You know, the good thing is the courses are in really, really good shape every single week out on tour. So that helps for sure. But yeah, we don't play a lot of amazing golf courses week in and week out. They're pretty good for tournaments. But you know, just as a big like architecture geek, there aren't too many awesome ones. Riviera is one that kind of sticks out that is sure. really good. But I don't know, man. I didn't get to play like a ton of places this year that were new, that were bad. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of try and do a little research before I'm a little bit of a, you know, snob that way. I like to go play really good places.
I feel like that's an article.
ZB, I got a question for you in that regard. When you're out there playing in an event, because I know that you're certainly more architecturally inclined than most tour players, and you're, you know, on Thursday or Friday or Saturday or Sunday of an event, you're sitting there at 200 par, and you get to, say, the fifth hole, right? I mean, obviously, you're locked in. You're playing your game. You're trying to score your best. Is there ever a point in time where you're in the middle of a tournament, you think, you know, wow, this is a really great hole architecturally, or wow, I wonder what the architect was thinking here because this just doesn't make any sense. I mean, does your interest in architecture cross over into your mind when you're actually playing in a tournament?
Not as much in like the actual like Thursday through Sunday stuff. I kind of just tune it out a little bit, but in practice rounds, yeah, for sure. It's something that, you know, over the last couple of years, as I've gotten more involved with it and kind of more into it, it pops. But yeah, there are always times that I'm like, I also notice a lot of things that I, you know, tell to other people that they're just like, how would you ever even like think of that? And it's just kind of how my brain works now a little bit. So it's good though. You know, I see a lot of things, good and bad, that I would like to incorporate at my place, and a lot of bad things that I'm like, you just have to stay away from doing that. So you see a lot of things that help.
Yeah, that's I get asked by a lot of people, like, do you have fun playing golf anymore? And it's like, you know, when I play bad places, I do get a little frustrated, but you know, it's still golf. And then when I play the really great places, it just makes you appreciate it more. You know, one place I forgot to mention was the Sandbox, this par 3 course up at Sand Valley. It's super cool. It's Zach, yeah, you'd love it. It's all like template holes. Both of you guys would love it. All like pretty much like you've got like a mini Redan, you've got a mini Devil's Asshole, you've got you know, mini double plateaus. But you know, what do you guys think it is about like par threes and short courses? You guys both mentioned a handful, including Pine Valleys, that make, you know, like it's becoming so popular.
Well, from my perspective, it just makes perfect sense. If you're a destination, whether you're a destination club or a destination public resort, to have a course that people can go out on at the end of the day and just tool around on and get a quick 9 or 18 in. You know, I tell people who go to Bandon all the time, and the preserve out there has gotten more recognition and notoriety. But you know, I talk to people who would go to Bandon and they'd go for 2 days or 4 days or whatever, and they'd just stick to the main courses. And it made no sense to me. I mean, here's this beautiful par three course that you can play in an hour at the end of the day, and have a great time with beautiful views. And to your point, the Sandbox at Sand Valley, it wasn't open when I was there, but I walked it, and it just looks amazing. I mean, you get to hit the most enjoyable shots that you generally play on a golf course are the approaches into greens and the putts, and here's a way to go out and in a relatively short amount of time get that experience 18 times over. It makes perfect sense to me for these kinds of places to have them. The short course at Pine Valley is a little bit of a different story in that you know, it's a private club. It's, it, you know, they do have members from all over the country, so guys come in and stay there. But the short course of Pine Valley is just, I can't imagine a better way to warm up for a round of golf than going out and playing these 10 holes that actually mimic the approaches into the holes on the main course. I don't know who thought it up. I know that that Fazio and Ransome built the course, but it's just incredible to go out there and see these shots into these short holes that you then are literally faced with an almost identical replica into the holes on the main course. It's just a fantastic way to both preview the course and get warmed up for a round. I was astonished by it.
Yeah, I mean, I just think they're a lot of fun. And that's kind of, at the end of the day, what you, you know, what you want out of a golf course or a destination is something to go enjoy. And it's really easy to kind of take one or two clubs out and just go whip around with your friends, especially kind of as the day is ending and there's not enough time to really go out. You know, a lot of times at a golf course, you have to go out four or five holes before you come back in. So it's pointless to go try and play a few extra holes unless there's a cool whiskey loop or something like that. But some of these, you know, these par three courses and short courses are so compact and they're right together that you can kind of just go out and play as much as you want until it gets dark and kind of just go have fun.
Well, that's the other thing too, Zach, is you can build a par three course. I mean, when you take away all of the land that's required for, you know, 300-yard, 250-yard tee shots, you can build a really amazing set of greens and tees in a very compact area. And a lot of these areas that are compact, they can squeeze them into spots on the property that have some of the most spectacular features, like at Vanda. So, you know, it's a no-brainer from my perspective.
You know, another thing I think it does, and I don't know how you feel about this, ZB, is I feel like it lessens the skill gap when you play a short course, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you... there's just there's less shots that you have to hit, you know what I mean? So it's exactly what you're saying. You know, when you go out and play a championship golf course, you have to drive it long and straight, you have to hit good, you know, long irons, and you have to putt and chip well. On most in most cases, short courses or par three courses, you don't have to do that as much to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So everyone that you're with, if people aren't all the same handicaps and skill level, you can all go out and have fun.
Reminds me, one of my favorite spots, I keep forgetting things, there's this, so I was in Portland for my buddy's bachelor party, college buddy, and like my group of college friends, like very few golfers, like, you know, one of them had never played golf in his life, or actually had played it once, and he was like 6'5", but we go and play this place in downtown, like close to downtown Portland. It was called McMenamin's pub course, and the place is the clubhouse is a bar, and you go there and you pay, I think it's $1 to rent a club and a putter. You get like a wedge and a putter and a ball. Every ball is $1 that you want, but all the holes are between like 40 and 70 yards, and like it was actually really hard for me. Like, cause like these, they'd be like straight downhill 40 yard shots. Like, and you know, you're like, how do you play this with a green that like runs away? And meanwhile, like my buddy who's like a 20 handicap would hit it to like 5 feet and I'd be over the green. You know, it's like, I found that place to be so much fun. And like all my buddies had a great time, even the guy that had never played golf before.
Yeah, I think that's where they're killing it right now. I mean, it's exactly what you said. The skill gap is brought in so much more, and you can just go have, it's more about just having fun. You know, you're not necessarily going out to these courses to go shoot under par or try and shoot a low score. You're out there to have fun with your friends. And, that's what's so good about them, I think.
All right. This is a really, so we're running low on time here, and we got a ton of questions. So we're going to have to do some rapid fires, but this is a really good one. All right. For all of us, I'm going to take it. Andrew Bailey wants template. You know, I saw somebody getting in your grill yesterday, Zach, about template holes. We'll say template/inspiration hole power rankings. So give each of you, give me your top three, you know, limit the reason why.
I would say the double plateau is one that's really cool because you can just change it up so much. And along that same lines, the beer, it's par three. It just has so much versatility. And then the punch bowl because of how fun it is.
Power rankings for templates. Number one, Redan, because it's the best par three design in golf. Number two, the punch bowl, because it's awesome. And number three is a tougher one for me. I'm going to say the always underrated 11 concept, because it's really able to be duplicated in a variety of settings, and I always enjoy playing them. They're always amongst my favorite holes on the course.
Yeah, I was going to say 11. I'll change it now because I'm a contrarian. I'll go double plateau. I wrote an article for Golfers Journal, shout out Golfers Journal, about double plateau and how awesome it is because you can put it on dead flat land and it's like an incredible hole. So I'd say double plateau. I'll say the short hole. I love short hole. I love that if you don't hit like a perfect wedge shot, you have a very, very good chance of making bogey, even if you're 15 feet away. And then I will say the null hole.
Oh, I like a null.
The Fisher's null hole just had me at when I was searching for my ball because I had the driver yips. But I think that was one of two greens that I played ping pong. I played ping pong on the null hole and the Eden hole. I was having a tough day that day.
Back to back.
All right.
Hey, how good is that stretch, though, at Fisher's? 9, 10, 11. 9, 10, 11, 12.
Yeah, John.
But
what
9, 10, 11 here, is ridiculous.
What's your favorite three hole stretch at Fisher's? This is, you know, we're going off the cuff. There's too many good questions. God.
3, 4, 5 is out of control.
Yeah, it's got to be 3, 4, 5. It has to be 3, 4, 5.
Dude, I did a cool Twitter like giveaway this year. It was my friend's idea of putting a composite course together, but you had to do like 2 to 4 hole stretches at golf courses.
Oh, I like that.
And it was, we got a lot of really cool courses, but that 3 to 5 at Fisher's Island is next level.
It's as good as it gets.
I have to give you some crap because I responded twice, but you deleted the tweets because you kept changing the rules.
No, that's not true.
So then I lost interest, you know?
I had to, people were like, they didn't understand it enough. I wasn't explaining it good enough, I guess. But that's my bad. I'll send you a hat.
That's a neat question, by the way. 3, 4, 5 at Fisher's, 2, 3, 4 at National.
1, 2, 3 at Chicago Golf. At Cyprus. What about 1, 2, 3 at Chicago Golf?
Yeah, that works too. That certainly works too.
There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, there are.
14 or 15, 16, 17 at Cyprus is one. Oh, this is the one. You have to do my overrated, underrated. 17 at Cyprus.
That's you too.
Underrated.
You think it's underrated? I think it's overrated.
I know. And I think that part of the reason that you think it's overrated and I think it's underrated is because you're a far better golfer than I am.
This is why
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but one of the reasons I think you think it's overrated is because you stand on that tee box and you're like, I know what I'm supposed to do here and I can't do it because there's a clump of trees growing in the middle of the fairway. Whereas for somebody like me, who is a poor golfer, relatively speaking, I just aim left and hope my ball ends up on solid ground and I'm happy. So I think that's my theory as to why we differ on this hole.
See, I think it's overrated because I don't think there was an actual intent to be able to go right event, you know, when the hole was planned out. So you could take an aggressive line right down the water and have a nice wedge shot in. And that's
interesting because my one play of Cyprus, I'll have you know that I went right. unintentionally, but we'll put that aside. I went right and hit that little 2-yard strip of fairway and had a beautiful little wedge shot into that green. So maybe maybe this talent gap is not as big as we initially thought. Maybe that's the issue.
I don't think you should have admitted that you were unintentionally, like, you know, you were going for that.
But do you know what I mean? I feel
I do.
I feel like if there was like a 15-yard fairway, or, you know, if there was a 15 or 20-yard fairway on the right, so if the trees and the bunkers were just moved left like 20 yards or 15 yards to where you could play aggressive down the right, I think it would be such a better hole. Not that it's a terrible hole or anything by any means. But,
it's almost like the bottle concept off the tee, where if you take the aggressive, or the Levin concept even, where if you take the aggressive line off the tee, you have the perfect angle into the green. I do think.
Exactly.
And I'm assuming the reason why there's not is just because the Pacific Ocean has eaten a couple yards of that fairway as the cliff collapsed.
Yeah, you make
a very good point there, Zach. I certainly agree with that.
You know, maybe you should write a letter to Bill Coore, you know, tell him your thoughts. You seem to be very passionate about this.
I'll just have you call him.
Let's see. What's the least photogenic course to photograph that is the best, like, you know, that doesn't get its due from photos?
Garden City all day long.
It's just tough to get those contours.
It's an awesome golf course that you just can't photograph because it's flat. It's surrounded by trees. There's just not enough there to photograph. And you also miss in photographs the depth and the scale of some of the bunkering there, which is just incredible. Oddly, though, Chicago Golf Club, which is also relatively flat, I think photographs very well. But for whatever reason, I have just had a hell of a time photographing Garden City in a way that does the course even remote justice to how good it is. That's my answer to that one.
I know Garden City has a ton
of... How good's that first hole at Garden City?
It's awesome. It's a great short par four with bunkers where you could end up lost in forever. I mean, the whole course is just incredible. But it just doesn't photograph well. It's very difficult to get photographs of it that actually give you a visual idea of what the course is all about.
All right, which course from Philip Johnson has been the least willing to let you have free reign with your camera? You said you made a note that you wanted me to ask you this.
Well, so, I mean, it depends on, I think the answer to that question depends on what it is that I'm there for. I mean, a lot of my photographs are taken while I'm playing the round of golf. And certainly, I always ask permission to shoot photos while I'm on a golf course. Sometimes I'm at a course because they wanted me to come and take photographs, and that's very easy, obviously. Other places are more sensitive to photography. Some courses don't mind photography, but they don't want photos of their course shared. And then drone photography is a whole different boat. So I won't get into all of it given the time sensitivity here. But, I mean, the bottom line is this. I always make sure to ask someone at the course, whether it is my host member or whether it is the head professional or someone in the shop, for permission. Where it gets interesting is when the course or its staff or the member that's hosting me has a different view on photography than, say, another member or another pro or the head of the greens committee. So in situations like that, there can arise these issues where you get permission to photograph, you get permission to share photos, and then somebody else has a problem with it. So when those kinds of situations occur, I always default to sensitivity for the club. So if there's anybody involved at a club, a member, a staff member, a pro, anybody at all who has an issue with anything I'm doing, I just don't post, or I take it down, or I remove what I've put up already. And it does happen. It happens very rarely. I think in all the courses that I've shot, I think I've only ever bumped into that kind of thing 2 or 3 times. And it's always a very easy issue to resolve. But I guess my point in this is, if you're going to do this and you're there as a guest and not specifically to photograph the course's invitation, just make sure you're asking and you're checking with people to make sure that what you're doing is okay.
Yeah, that's good advice. I would second that. All right, let's do some overrated underrateds, and I'm sad there's so many good questions. Overrated underrated, taking iPhone pano photos.
Pano underrated. Photos? I think that's way underrated. I think all iPhone photos are way underrated.
I love the mini pano. Shout out Peter Korbakis, who taught me it. But
very nice.
Yeah. What about golf knickers? That's from Matt Wenmaker.
I go underrated, man. Show your style, man. Pimp it out.
ZB, we can see you.
I'm gonna go overrated on that one.
You've got a different throwback passion now, huh?
Yeah, I'm deep in the hickory game. Shout out to Matt Mollica down at
that's addictive, isn't it?
In Oz. It's addictive. Oh, it's so good. It's out of control. I got some for Santa brought me some for Christmas, so I'm excited to go hit some shots.
You know, I think I know this guy that I play amateur stuff with in Chicago. He's like he plays in like the US Hickory Open. I'm gonna get in that. I gotta get a set of hickories.
Andy, I think you would love it. I think you would. Yeah.
I wonder if I could get crooked with a hickory manufacturer, you know.
Louisville.
You know, do the golf blogger thing. Get some handouts.
crooked Andy.
It brings back all the wonderful architectural features that we love. It's a great way to play golf.
When we played it at Royal Melbourne, I couldn't believe just how different par fives were. You know, you get these cross bunkers like 40 yards short, 50 yards short of the green that now you're kind of like, why did they even put that there? Mm-hmm. And you quickly realize like, okay, that's why those bunkers are there. Because if you miss hit shots at all, like you're in these death bunkers that, you know, par fives are really whole. Fives are good scorers.
Way underrated hickories.
Yeah,
way underrated.
Those bunkers you were talking about, I always write. I'm like, well, they add a lot of interest to layup shots or poor drives. So let's see. We got another couple good ones in here. We'll just... Oh, friend of the pod, Simon Haynes. When are we going over across the pond?
Well, first of all, shout out to Simon, who runs an absolutely fascinating Twitter account of his own. I call it the Haynes Collection, where he posts old school pictures of golf courses. A lot of times he'll post a photo after I post one that is the same golf course from the same angle from about 80 to 100 years ago. I don't know where he gets his archive from, but it knows no bounds. He's a great follow. People should follow him on Twitter. The answer to his question is in 2018, I'm going over. I don't care where I play. I don't care how long I'm there for, but at a bare minimum, I'm going over to the UK and I'm playing North Berwick and anywhere else that I can squeeze into to the trip. But there's no way that 2018 is passing without me seeing NB.
Yeah, I think I'm going to make a trip. Ideal world, I'd love to just pick up and live there for 3 months and spend a month in Ireland, month in Scotland, and month in England. But we got to see if the wife can get on board with that.
If you need a roommate, let me know.
Yeah. We'll see. If anybody, you know, needs a freelance writer, my wife would be a great one.
I'm not sure I could lawyer from the UK or if my job would be cool with that, but there's no harm in checking.
Your law degree transfers if you're there for golf, I heard.
This is if that's not a real rule, it sounds like it should be.
ZB, you going to go anywhere big this year? I feel like you need to go to mid-ocean.
Yeah, that'd be a good one. Like a quick one that's easy for me, I need to go spend some time in San Francisco. But hoping to get back over for the Dunhill Links over across the pond, because that's next level golf over there. It's so good. Take the hickories too.
Yeah, I really want to do the I think the Heathland course interests me the most, which people might say is crazy, but I want to play like Walking and, you know, Woking. That's so not woke that I mispronounced it. All right, guys, thanks for coming on. Happy New Year. If anybody stayed with us to this long, I'm sorry. But
yeah, my apologies too, but you know how we like to talk when we get talking about golf. Andy, seriously, thanks for having me. It's great to talk to you guys again. It's great to see what you've done with this podcast. ZV, we got to tee it up sometime soon. In the meantime, I'll look forward to catching you on TV here and there. But I appreciate what you guys do, both of you, and it's always a pleasure talking golf with you.
We got to do the national round.
Yeah, we got to do the national. Yeah, that's 100%.
Fine. Done. Yeah.
It's on my list of national. Must.
I'm willing to do that and get my ass kicked all over the golf course just for the sake of playing with you guys there. So
maybe we'll do it the Monday after ZB wins the U.S. Open next door.
Oh, sick. I love it.
That works.
I'm in.
That works.
All right. See you guys. Happy New Year.
Okay.
See you later. Take care. Thanks, guys.
You've been listening to the Fried Egg Podcast. We do the digging for you.